From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. John Howard lives in an impressive home, a Manhattan brownstone, four stories high, covered in green vines.
I walked into this house and I walked over here and I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll buy it. I didn't even go upstairs.
It's not the house that we're here to see so much as what's in it. John's an art collector.
I noticed the art right away.
Mm-hmm.
You have art in all the rooms in this house?
Pretty much.
John's talking to reporter Giselle Rigatow. She's here to see one painting in particular, one that hasn't hung in John's house for years.
So it's all wrapped in brown paper. Did you wrap it yourself?
I did not. And it's all tied up very neatly with cord, which I'm now going to cut.
It has a very prestigious signature, Willem de Kooning. He's a famous Dutch-American painter known for his abstract expressionist work.
So I probably haven't seen this in, I don't know, something between 5 and 10 years. And there it is.
The painting has vibrant splashes of blue, black, white, and a peculiar yellow that John just loves.
It's not a chrome yellow. It's a kind of muted yellow. It has more brown in it, so it's an ochre color is what I call it.
When he bought it back in 2007, it was the most he ever spent on a piece of art, $4 million.
There was a poignance to my buying it.
John's dad collected art. De Kooning was one of his favorites.
My father could never afford to buy one of his paintings.
His dad was a Jewish immigrant who escaped from Germany at the beginning of World War II. For John, the De Kooning was kind of a statement, like, look at how far we've come. It used to hang next to his fireplace. Then, a few years after he bought it, he took it to an expert.
And the guy calls me back in a day and says it's a fake. And I said, how do you know it's a fake? He goes, you know that yellow on the painting? I go, yeah, I know that yellow. That's why I bought the painting. That yellow is so beautiful. He goes, well, you know, the painting was supposed to be painted in 1953. That particular chrome yellow wasn't invented until 1990.
John fell prey to a fake art scheme, one that federal prosecutors say is the largest in modern U.S. history. 63 fake masterpieces that sold for more than $80 million.
It's a crazy story.
A crazy story that Giselle's been tracking for years. The story made international news when it broke. At the center were four immigrants, two Spanish brothers, a Mexican-American woman, and a Chinese painter.
In the garage behind his house in Queens, the Chinese painter churned out fake painting after fake painting. Artworks in the style of people like Jackson Pollock, Andy Warhol, and Mark Rothko.
And then they did all sorts of things to make the paintings look old.
They rubbed tea bags on them to make them brown. They even emptied dustbuster bins on the canvases because old paintings have dirt and dust that collect on them.
But collectors don't buy Pollocks and Rothkos from strangers working out of a garage. They buy them from trusted galleries. So one of the fraudsters, a woman by the name of Glafira Rosales, approached two galleries with a story.
She told them she was a dealer who was representing an anonymous European collector. He had just died and the family was selling some of his works.
The galleries bought the paintings and resold them to collectors. This started in the mid-90s and continued for the next 15 years.
One of these galleries was the Nodler Gallery. It was one of the oldest and most well-respected art galleries in the country. Of the 63 fake paintings, Nodler sold 40 of them. Another gallery, Julian Weisman Fine Art, owned by a former Nodler employee, sold the other 23.
Collectors like John Howard say they never doubted the authenticity of the paintings because those galleries are supposed to make sure they're the real thing.
These are the most august, serious people, institutional people in the world, and they're vetting it. So what more work could I have done?
Eventually, the FBI got involved and the whole thing came crashing down. Remember, the victims were conned out of more than $80 million. But when the investigation was over, almost no one was punished. Glafira Rosales, the fake art dealer, struck a plea deal and spent just 3 months behind bars. Her partners all fled the country before they could be arrested. As for the art galleries, they were never charged with any crimes. And that got Giselle's reporter sense tingling.
I've spent most of my career reporting on arts and culture, and I'm also an immigrant myself, so I've been fascinated with how four people who didn't speak English particularly well and were not well connected in high-end art circles, how could they have pulled this whole scheme off? And I just kept thinking that this story isn't just about them. It's also about those two art galleries that sold the 63 fake paintings.
Giselli set out on a journey that would take her from that garage in Queens to the back rooms of some of the glitziest galleries in the world. It would open up even bigger questions about the winners and losers in this massive multi-million dollar scam. Giselli takes the story from here.
The Nodler Gallery was a legendary place. Paintings by Rembrandt and Vermeer made their way through these doors. It used to sit here on East 70th Street in Manhattan's Upper East Side. And it was in business for 165 years. When the fake dealer Glafira Rosales would show up here, she often arrived by car, clutching paintings in her bare hands, no big wooden crates, which is how expensive art is generally handled. And Glafira had few details to offer about where the paintings were coming from, just that she was representing a collector who wished to remain anonymous. The first two paintings the Nodler Gallery bought from her were by Richard Diebenkorn, a California-based artist who had just died. Soon after, his daughter, Gretchen Diebenkorn Grant, says she got a call from Nodler. It was from someone you're going to hear about a lot, someone who wouldn't agree to talk to us for this story, Ann Friedman, the gallery's president.
She said, some Diebenkorns have come in and I thought you'd be interested in seeing them.
The two pieces Nodler invited Gretchen to see were a bit of a mystery. They had almost no provenance. Provenance is pretty important in the art world. It's the chronology of everyone who's ever owned a particular piece of art. In a back room at the gallery, Gretchen and her mom looked at the paintings closely, studying them. Gretchen thought they had the right proportions, the right colors.
The tonality of it was pretty good. Well, I would say quite good. But there was something wrong somehow to me. And so I kept looking at it, and my mother kept looking at it.
She finally realized what's missing.
It didn't have any soul. It had no life.
But Gretchen didn't come right out and say what she was thinking.
Because we were advised early on never to say anything was not by my father, the F word, as we refer to it.
F word meaning fake. It's a big no-no in the art world. Because if you say an artwork is a fake, you can be sued. Owners can come after you for defamation of property. Even though she didn't use the F word, Gretchen says she made her uncertainty about the paintings clear to the gallery's president, Ann Friedman. Then after a few months, she got a letter from the Nodler Gallery,
saying that because we had authenticated this work, they had then sold it and they wanted us to know that. And my mother was outraged, as was I, because we most certainly did not say that.
Gretchen says she was never asked to authenticate the art, only to see it. Court documents show that lots of collectors who bought these fake paintings were under the impression that experts had authenticated them. But many experts testified that it never happened. So what became of those paintings Gretchen looked at? For that, we head to Manhattan's Upper West Side to meet Bernard Kruger.
Molly.
Bernard's a doctor. He lives in an apartment with his wife, two kids, their dog Molly, and a lot of art. Bernard has been a lifelong fan of Richard Diebenkorn.
You know, I was always attracted to the underpainting, the color feels, the subtleness of it, and the collage. I like collage.
He saw several Diebenkorn exhibitions at the Nodler Gallery. He wanted to buy some of his pieces, but it wasn't easy.
I would go to Nodler and, you know, you'd have to beg her to buy a Diebenkorn.
He's talking about Ann Friedman. She was a tough gatekeeper.
She was absolutely nasty about it. And if you weren't somebody that she cared about, she wouldn't let you buy one.
Why not?
Well, because this is how she gave out her favors. And finally, she let me buy one. I never got a choice of one. She never would let me buy the best.
He says it was like this for years, always courting Ann Friedman, begging to buy. Then, in 1994, things changed. Suddenly, he gets a call. Ann tells him that Nodler has two pieces available for him to see. Those same Diebenkorns Gretchen and her mom looked at months earlier.
Oh, I think I paid $80 for it or $75, and by then I was
I checked. He actually paid $95,000 for it, about $30,000 less than the last Diebenkorn he had bought. I asked him, didn't you think it was strange? All of a sudden, a Diebenkorn is coming your way so easily and at such a good price?
I thought it was great. Finally, you know, I'm getting a good deal on a Diebenkorn.
Nodler was getting a good deal, too. Court records show that the gallery made $45,000 on Bernard's fake Diebenkorn, a profit margin of 90%. That's way above the industry average, which is more like 20 to 30%. Throughout the years, as Nodler buys more and more of the fakes, its profit margin skyrockets. In some cases, the gallery sold paintings for more than 10 times what it paid to the dealer, Glafira Rosales. I learned that in 2003, the International Foundation for Art Research, or IFAR, analyzed one of the Pollocks that came from Glafira. It could not confirm the painting was legitimate. Nodler knew about this, but continued buying pieces from her anyway. Court records reveal that between 1994 and 2011, the fakes were the only thing keeping the Nodler Gallery profitable. The business made about $30 million over that period. But take away the fakes, and it would have been more than $3 million in the hole. The art world is notoriously unregulated. It's often compared to the markets for drugs and guns, and deals are frequently sealed with handshakes. Still, there are best practices, tried and true methods that galleries use to ensure that the artwork they are selling is legit. To talk about how it's supposed to work, I turned to one of the most prominent art dealers in the country.
Everything smells of wood here.
That's me burning incense.
Meet the metaphysical Mark Limscher.
I'm so new crystals. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm way past new age, okay? This is about enlightenment, am I right? I mean, what else is the art world about?
Mark is the president of Pace Gallery. It's one of the largest galleries in New York City. It was founded by his dad in 1960. Pace represents one of the giants of American art, Mark Rothko. Still, it's not like the gallery has his paintings sitting on shelves. They are extremely rare. But it seems it's my lucky day.
So do you have a Rothko available?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Strangely enough.
Could we see it?
No.
Why?
I'm sorry.
Why not?
Because I'm only allowed to offer it to one person, and that person's waiting.
Oh, but we're not going to buy it.
I know.
We're just pretending.
I know.
Can you describe the painting or tell us what it is?
Good question. Can I do that?
Well, he can't. All Mark can say is it's owned by someone famous.
That famous owner does not want anyone to know that this painting is for sale. Okay, so that lends us towards a possibility for fraud. Because I can turn to you and say, I can't tell you anything about this painting.
I know.
It's a secret.
Mark says there's a reason it's done this way.
We don't want Rothko's floating around on the open market. Okay? And people discussing the prices and is it available? Why is it available? Why does that person need the money? Et cetera, et cetera. We're a business where being the first or only person to be offered that painting is very important to the value of that painting.
This is part of how art dealers create excitement and control prices. They don't offer them to just anybody.
We should be able to offer it to one person and sell it.
Mark says trusted collectors are the ones who get to buy the best work, no one else. People like me don't get to just walk in off the streets and buy a Rothko. But that's exactly what happened at Nodler. One collector walked into the gallery for the first time and was offered a Rothko and a Pollock. He bought the Rothko. It was fake. Mark's tight-lipped about his Rothko. But after some prodding, he does tell me the price. More than $100 million. Even though buyers might not have all the information they would like, Mark says there are basic safeguards to make sure people are getting what they pay for.
So we say your painting's been included in the catalog raisonné. We show you that's in the catalog raisonné.
The catalog raisonné is like the artist's Bible. It has all of his or her works that are believed to be authentic. In the case of the fakes, Knoedler and Julian Weissman were selling works without that. Buyers had no proof that William de Kooning, Mark Rothko, or Robert Motherwell had ever created the paintings they were paying millions for. There's another way paintings are authenticated.
You can't tell me who is selling it.
No.
Can you give me some documentation of provenance?
I can definitely give you the documentation of the provenance, but the last entry is going to say private collection, New York.
Perfect provenance should trace ownership of a painting all the way back to the artist's studio, proving that it's authentic. But holes in provenance are common.
So it looks like I'm going to this in the dark.
You're going to be a little bit in the dark.
The collectors who bought all those fake paintings were completely in the dark because the works had almost zero provenance and nothing in a catalog raisonné. Those collectors should have been more skeptical, but so should the galleries. They bought masterpiece after masterpiece that supposedly came from a single anonymous collector. What collector has dozens of masterpieces of unknown origin? I spoke to several experts who say that after years of buying up mysterious works, the galleries should have realized it was too good to be true.
If you had been in that situation, would you have bought those paintings?
No, never.
If people that are in this market
commit
some kind of wrongdoing in the practice of your profession,
absolutely.
Don't you think they should be punished for it?
Yes.
Do you think they were?
Probably not. You know, we are in a business of trust, and I think that if you break trust and do not assume immediately 100% responsibility, there's nothing worse than that in the art business. There can be no greater crime.
I spoke to multiple victims for this story who believe that at some point the two galleries must have suspected that the paintings they were selling were fake. Which is why this next detail raises even more questions. John Howard says a few months after he bought that fake de Kooning, he got a call from Knoedler's president, Ann Friedman.
She said, "What other artists are you interested in? What other paintings are you interested in? Because you never know when we're going to come across something."
John says he told her about one artist he loves, American abstract painter Robert Motherwell.
There's a series of paintings that he did called the Spanish Elegy series, which are beautiful paintings. And they're large format ones and small ones. And I said, I know the small ones are rarer, but I'd really be interested in a small format Spanish Elegy painting.
Then about 6 months later, John says Anne calls him again.
And she goes, "John Howard, I don't know, I remember this expression, I don't know what lucky star you live under, but guess what I have in my hands?" You know, and I pause and I think and I go, "A small format Spanish Elegy painting?" And she goes, "Exactly. Can you come on Saturday to see it?"
But when John sees the painting, he doesn't like it and decides to pass. That extremely rare Motherwell also turned out to be fake.
That fake painting came from Glafira Rosales. We don't know if Ann Friedman asked Glafira for it specifically, but prosecutors did find that on multiple occasions, gallery employees went to Glafira to request specific, hard-to-find works. We'll learn more about that after the break, when we sit down with Ann Friedman's lawyer, Luke Negus.
The document production that Knoedler made in this case was thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of research and memos and
research on what?
On the story. So,
but it was all fake. What kind of research was that?
Sure.
That's coming up on Reveal.